jab number 2, 18 clicks, 0.25 milligrams. 5, 6, out. Charlene and I have been on Ozempic for a week now, and in this episode we get together to report our results, discuss the side effects we may or may not have been having, and talk about how Ozempic has been making us feel in the first week. Welcome to episode 2 of Ozempic Diaries. Hi everyone, and welcome to Ozempic Diaries episode 2. If you didn't catch our first episode, which is about the day after the first jab, maybe go and have a listen to that and then come back to this episode, which is about the results we've had in our first week. The results, the side effects, thoughts, feelings. It's a whole new big adventure and a step. And we've been doing, obviously overthinking it because we're doing a podcast about it. And, you know, we're very focused on what's going on in our bodies and all that. So, yeah, without further ado, Charlene, hi, good morning.
How's it? Hello, how are you?
Yeah, good. First week went well and we're kind of in it now. How are you feeling this morning? Because we both took a jab last night as well.
I'm fine. I feel not nauseous. It's the strangest feeling to describe. I feel full. Like my when I drink water, I do drink a lot of water, but I feel like I have eaten a lot and I haven't had breakfast at all. So I had a cup of coffee, and after the coffee this morning, I felt like, oh, now I'm supposed to have breakfast, but I don't know how I'm going to squeeze it in because I feel so full.
Right. A couple of times this week, I've had an Ozempic experience, right? Which I think we can both talk about, like a moment where we've gone, oh, I'm not full, or some kind of appetite thing has happened. But let's start with what the people are interested in, which is results. It's been 1 week. And let me go first because it's going to be an anticlimax if I go second. So I started on 98 last week, and now I'm down to 96.4. So I lost 1.6 kilograms over the week. The way it kind of went was frustratingly up and down between 97 and 98. And then on Saturday, I dropped down to 96.9 and then down to 96.4. So at the end of the week, it seemed to kind of drop down, and which is interesting because it's on the weekend, which is normally a nightmare. Monday is normally the day you kind of pop up because you misbehaved on the weekend. But I was pretty good. Had a braai, snacked a lot, wasn't restraining myself horribly, but was pretty good. And 1.6 I'm very happy with. But Charlene, how much did you lose last week?
So when at my very first weigh-in before I took my first jab, I was 86.9. And when I weighed this morning, I'm 82.8. So it's a 4.1 kilogram loss. And I have mixed feelings about it, if I have to be honest, because I think my biggest concern or worry is that I'm not eating enough.
Right.
And I think it's because I just don't have an appetite. So to eat is really something I have to think about, like, what am I going to eat that's not going to make me feel too full? And you know, because you don't get hungry, I feel like, you know, oftentimes people in their old age are like, just enjoy that you can still eat, because I've had like elderly people in my life oftentimes say, I can't eat anymore. I can't eat anymore. And I feel kind of ungrateful for not, like, I don't want to feel like I'm complaining, but I'm very aware that you don't want to be starving yourself unintentionally.
Yeah,
you're not giving your body the nutrients it needs. That's going to lead to problems down the way. That's the first part. The second part, I mean, obviously, I'm super happy with a 4.1 kilogram loss. Over the 12 weeks, I'm aiming for a 10 kilogram loss. That's a huge chunk of weight already gone. But I also have to say that I don't get that excited about a big loss initially anymore, because I know it's not uncommon for me to, when I make big changes to my diet in the first week or two, to see a huge drop. I hold on to a lot of water. And I think a lot of it is probably water weight. But I definitely think I need to be more mindful of eating enough.
Yeah, the recommendation is usually small kind of six small meals instead of massive meals, or trying to, I'm eating biltong or jerky if you're not from South Africa. Trying to get a little bit of that protein in is very important, obviously, to keep your muscle mass, keep gymming and all that. But could your lack of appetite also be attributed to, you had a touch of the flu last week, didn't you?
Yeah, but historically for me, if I feel unwell, it's an opportunity to eat.
Just eat
because
more.
I'm an emotional eater. So when I feel down or I feel unwell, I tend to like comfort eat, because it's like it makes something to make you feel better. So I don't think that it's related to the flu. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to tell, because it's not like a change that's like chalk and cheese. You feel like yourself.
Mm.
And because I'm not nauseous or vomiting or anything like that, it's hard to say. I mean, it has to be the Ozempic. It's the only thing I've done differently. So the lack of appetite is obviously just, I don't have any, food doesn't seem exciting to me. And I'm a person that gets excited by food and delicious things that look delicious. And yeah.
Sure.
I mean, it's a huge loss, but I'm used to seeing a plateau around 2 or 3 weeks into my diet changes. So we'll see how that goes.
Also, I mean, a plateau or at least a slowing down would probably be healthy.
Yeah, it's too much. And so I'm also still on the 0.25 milligrams for the first 4 weeks. So if I up the dosage, I have to take into consideration what's going to happen once you start upping the dosage. So yeah, I mean, I'm happy. I'm not mad at that. It's nice. But and it's strange, because for a long time in my life, thin, that mindset of thin, like being skin and bone is good. If I could just be skin and bone, I'd be so happy.
Yeah.
And it's also interesting to me that I'm being more cautious, because that shows me that I'm in a better place from a mental health perspective or a mindset perspective when it comes to weight loss. So that I'm quite happy with.
Yeah. Look, I think that I'm certainly kind of like a 90s teenager who grew up with images of Kate Moss and Brad Pitt, and certainly there were the Arnold Schwarzeneggers and all that kind of thing. But we all grew up with highly unrealistic expectations of body image. And that's still true to this day. But in our teenagerhood, it was being thin. That was the thing.
Mm, mm.
So, and I don't think I'm ever going to quite shrug that. You know, I'm not going to get rid of that feeling. I can intellectually understand that it's not healthy, and I can understand that it's not a great goal, but there was so much cultural weight behind being skinny that, like, it's difficult for me to disassociate from it. But anyway, that aside, back to the appetite thing, I found that it's quite a subtle thing. It's not, I didn't have moments where I would, well, except one, I had a half a wrap and then felt full. So I'd stopped eating it. That was one kind of incident. But other than that, I didn't feel like I was being bloated all the time. I didn't feel walking around like, oh, I couldn't eat another bite. I just didn't have the drive to go and get a snack. Like I work from home, so I spend hours in my office or moving around the house. And often as soon as I leave my room, I'll just walk over to the fridge. And that didn't happen at all this week. I just didn't have that kind of that need to go and investigate what's yummy.
I feel snacky, yeah.
Yeah, just don't feel snacky. And then I did have one particular Ozempic moment, which I recorded. So I'll post that right now. Okay, so I think I just had like an Ozempic moment. I don't feel hungry. I had a trinchado, chicken pieces in a garlic and onion cream sauce. Quite a small meal, like one of the light bites, and I feel full. And it's been an hour, hour and a half. And that for me is interesting, that I'm still full. I haven't had cravings for snacks and stuff, but I haven't felt full. And right now I just felt like, cool, I'm not hungry. That meal was a while ago, very small, and I'm full. The fact that for hours afterwards I was full is, I stopped and realized that is different for me. So yeah, it's good. Oh, and just a note on the weight loss, 1.6 is great for me. Happy with that. And as you say, we're still on the, kind of like the lowest introductory dose. But let's talk about side effects. What did you experience?
I didn't have, there was one day where I felt, I went to bed, I think it was the Wednesday evening, and I had a headache. again, for me, it's hard to tell whether that is a side effect of not having eaten enough or maybe a bit dehydrated, or whether because I'm cutting out sugars and things like that, maybe it's a little bit of a detox headache, or whether it is a Ozempic specific side effect. Also, I have to say that it's not uncommon for me to suffer from headaches because of my estrogen dominance. I've got such high levels of estrogen that it causes headaches. So I had a headache the one day, and then there was one particular day where I felt not like I'm going to vomit, but almost as though it's a little bit more difficult to swallow your saliva. And I was making something, we were making something for lunch or dinner, and I looked at it and the smell made me go a bit, you know, yeah, not nauseous, but it's weird. Yeah, it was like I had to just take a moment. And that is uncommon for me, because unless food is like off and has a bad smell, that never, ever, ever happens to me.
I had similar on Monday, the first day after the jab, and then the Tuesday. In the afternoons, I had a mild headache as well. But otherwise, the only other effect I've really had is that on that Tuesday, I felt, it's hard to explain. I think we've chatted about this on WhatsApp before, but I didn't feel sick. I didn't feel dizzy. I didn't feel lightheaded. I felt a little bit airy. It's like you've had three glasses of wine or a touch of cannabis.
Yes.
Like I live on the coast in Cape Town.
When we discussed it, I could relate to that. It's almost as though, not like you're motion sick, but and not like your ears are ringing, but it's almost as though you have a bit of vertigo or something.
Yeah. Yeah, not in a pronounced, you know, in danger of falling over way. Actually, I could relate it to getting off a boat after feeling a little bit seasick. Like that's maybe like you're recovering from it and you don't actually feel sick anymore, but there's a certain sense of like not like, I don't know, woozy, but very low level. Anyway.
Yes. Yes.
So that's the side effects that we've experienced. But let's then go into a little bit of a science corner and chat about side effects in general, which a lot of people worry about. It's every drug has side effects, but there is a lot of anxiety about what Ozempic can cause. So to unpack some of that and some of the side effects, let's go to my little science corner of the podcast, Ozempic John Splained. Okay, before we get into this, let me just note that I get quite in-depth here. I've put timestamps in the show notes so you can skip to whichever side effect you're interested in, or you can listen to them all if you like. Cool. So what I've done is I've got a list of all the common side effects of Ozempic, just to inform everyone, and then kind of ranked as to how often they appear in people. So these ones affect more than 1 in 10 people. Nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, constipation, and loss of appetite, which is kind of the whole point. I wouldn't call that a side effect. Nausea often occurs when starting Ozempic and may improve over time. Often people take Ozempic at nighttime on Sunday, like we've been doing, so you can sleep through it if you feel bad. Neither of us have actually felt bad. Vomiting, obviously, if your nausea gets worse. Diarrhea and constipation, I haven't had an issue with that. Then there are less common side effects. So these affect up to 1 in 10 people. So indigestion, abdominal pain, bloating or gas, fatigue, dizziness. So on a very, very low level, I guess we kind of experienced that. Gallbladder issues, injection site reactions, and reflux or heartburn. So those are affecting up to 1 in 10 people. Then there's uncommon side effects affecting up to 1 in 100 people. So this is where the ones like pancreatitis comes in, which is inflammation of the pancreas. Symptoms include severe abdominal pain that may radiate to the back, nausea and vomiting. Gallstones, increased heart rate, tachycardia. Some people may notice a faster pulse. Hair loss, wow, more linked to rapid weight loss than the drug itself. And then mild allergic reactions. And then there's the rare side effects affecting fewer than 1 in 1,000 people. Severe allergic reactions like anaphylaxis, like you literally go into anaphylactic shock, like someone who's extremely allergic to peanut butter. kidney problems, worsening kidney function, especially if dehydrated due to vomiting or diarrhea, severe hypoglycemia, low blood sugar. I guess it is an insulin management tool, so in some case that'll go overboard. Thyroid tumors, those are the rarest ones. And then long-term concerns would be gallbladder and digestive issues if you do get, you know, if you do have a severe reaction in your stomach to it. Potential cardiovascular impact, although semaglutide and some GLP-1s are being used for cardiovascular protective properties. And then muscle loss. Okay, I've got to interrupt myself there, because over the last week, I've had people send me articles about Ozempic making you go blind, Ozempic giving you premature osteoporosis, and of course the thyroid cancer thing and the pancreatitis thing. Those are the ones that people are most afraid of, right? So let's just look at the evidence here. A 2023 meta-analysis of GLP-1 agonists, which is Ozempic is one of those, found no conclusive evidence of a direct increase in pancreatitis risk, although individual case reports still exist. A 2018 large-scale study in the journal Diabetes Care found no significant difference in pancreatitis rates between GLP-1 users and non-users. So the bottom line here is that the strongest evidence suggests that Ozempic does not directly cause pancreatitis, but may contribute in certain high-risk individuals. Let's go on to thyroid cancer. What does the science say there? The concern about Ozempic and thyroid cancer comes from animal studies and has led to a boxed warning on the drug's label. However, evidence in humans is inconclusive. So basically the study was in rats and mice, and in rats and mice, GLP-1 receptor agonists led to thyroid C-cell hyperplasia, which is an abnormal growth of C-cells, and in some cases, medullary thyroid carcinoma, which sounds very scary, of course, and the cancer risk increased with higher doses. Why this might not apply to humans? Humans have far fewer GLP-1 receptors in C-cells than rodents, meaning the mechanism may not translate to humans. And the large epidemiological studies on GLP-1 drugs like liraglutide, semaglutide, have not found a significant increase in thyroid cancer cases in humans. So, let's boil all that down. Who should be concerned? High-risk groups. People with a family history of medullary thyroid carcinoma, or MEN2, multiple endocrine neoplasia type 2, should avoid Ozempic due to the theoretical risk. Those with pre-existing thyroid nodules may want to monitor any changes with their doctor. If you have no family history of MTC or MEN2 and no thyroid abnormalities, the current evidence suggests that there's no significant risk. Right, so that's the thyroid one. Then let's talk about bone density loss. This is one I've seen a few videos about. You're going to get brittle bones. There was a influencer who said she got osteoporosis from Ozempic. Okay, here we see that there is no direct evidence that Ozempic causes bone density loss, but some studies suggest it may have an indirect effect on bone health, particularly due to weight loss and changes in hormonal signaling. So, rapid weight loss is a well-documented risk factor for bone mineral density loss, and GLP-1 receptor agonists like Ozempic affect hormones that regulate metabolism, which could have potential effects on bone health. So, let's have a look at what the studies say. A 2022 meta-analysis found no increased risk of osteoporosis or fractures in GLP-1 drug users. A 2023 study in JAMA on semaglutide users with obesity did not show significant bone loss over 68 weeks. And a Danish registry study found no increase in fractures among GLP users compared to other diabetes medications. Should you be concerned? If you lose weight too quickly, more than 1 kilogram per week, your bone density could be affected. If you already have osteoporosis or low bone mass or are postmenopausal, monitoring bone health is recommended. Again, here, the clickbait outrage engine has worked its magic and people are worried that your bones are going to snap. The fact is that when you lose weight, you lose muscle mass, some percentage of it. So if you lose weight, things happen to your body. How do you stop those things? You maintain your good protein intake and you do resistance training so that your body thinks to itself, oh, I need to keep this muscle. The fat can go first, but I need, in order to survive, to keep the muscle. So that's why you do resistance training to counteract these effects. And the last one that I want to cover is quite interesting. It's about loss of vision. There have been some reports of vision problems in people taking Ozempic, but there is no direct evidence that the drug itself causes vision loss. However, the link may be due to rapid blood sugar changes, diabetic retinopathy, and potential effects on blood vessels in the eye. The Sustained 6 clinical trial found that people on semaglutide with existing diabetic retinopathy had a higher risk of worsening eye disease, especially if they had poorly controlled diabetes before starting Ozempic. In conclusion, there is no confirmed link between Ozempic and new cases of blindness or severe optic nerve damage. So, you may be at a higher risk of vision issues with Ozempic if you have pre-existing diabetic retinopathy. You experience a rapid drop in blood sugar levels, you lose weight very quickly, which can cause dehydration or nutritional deficiencies, or you already have poor circulation or eye conditions. To summarize that, in the majority of cases, there is no direct link between Ozempic and the condition. It is a side effect of losing weight, or it is a very small statistical increase that can happen to people who have pre-existing conditions. So, do your own research. If any of the things that I've mentioned is something that you have a pre-existing condition for, then definitely do some research and, of course, talk to your doctor before you get a prescription, which is the only way you can get this. But the next time you see a headline that says Ozempic causes blindness, if it's from the Daily Mail, don't read it or don't watch it. You know, it's just there's so much nonsense out there. Now, part two, let's talk about what happens when you go from obese to healthy. And I'm going to summarize this quite quickly here. Cardiovascular disease, including heart attacks and stroke. Risk reduction, 30 to 50% lower risk of heart disease or related death. Stroke, a 10% weight loss can reduce your stroke risk by 40%. People who go from obese to healthy weight cut their heart failure risk by over 50%. Type 2 diabetes, reduced by up to 80%. Breast cancer risk drops 25 to 50% after significant weight loss. Colon cancer by 20 to 40%. Losing weight also lowers inflammation, reducing overall cancer risk. Then liver disease, fatty liver or psoriasis. 50 to 70% lower risk of severe liver disease. Losing 7 to 10% of body weight can reverse fatty liver disease. Liver failure risk drops by over 60% when obesity is corrected. Kidney disease, risk reduction, 30 to 50% lower risk of chronic kidney disease and kidney failure. Lowering blood pressure from weight loss reduces kidney failure risk by up to 40%. Dementia and Alzheimer's disease, midlife obesity increases dementia risk by 30 to 40%. Overall mortality, risk reduction, 50 to 60% lower risk of premature death. A BMI over 35 doubles the risk of early death compared to a healthy BMI, which is 8.5 to 24.9. And people who go from obese to a normal weight live 3 to 7 years longer on average. So when I first started researching Ozempic, the conclusion that I came to was whatever side effects it has, unless they are some of the very rare chronic side effects, they're not going to be any worse than obesity. Obesity will kill you far more reliably than GLP-1s. So I put that out there and I invite you to take it as you will. So those are the side effects and definitely something to keep an eye on. But so far we seem to be in the statistical normal band of people who have very minor to zero. We are now going to move on to our first Q&A / Ozempic engagement little section here, where we've got some questions, some stories, a couple of recordings from people in the WhatsApp community. And we'd love it if you joined the WhatsApp community. There's a link in the show notes and you can ask us questions. You can tell us your Ozempic story, your concerns. If you want to fight us about anything, feel free to come and bring it to WhatsApp and we'll get it on in a fighty way. I feel like I made that sound weird. This message is from an unnamed friend of Charlene's who shares his Ozempic experience with us, and in particular, a word of advice on going straight into a 1 milligram dose. Chris, in the interests of keeping the episode short, I've increased the speed of his voice note, as I do with most voice notes.
Yeah, basically, I started end of July, beginning of August last year, went through the whole 0.25 and then 0.5 and then up to 1 milligram, and I basically did a month on each, and then end of November, there wasn't any stock. I mean, I didn't look incredibly hard, but there wasn't any nearby, and I'd done quite well. I'd lost about 10 kgs. I had some super crazy side effects. I mean, probably not as bad as it can be, but on the day that I took it, I would, for instance, have dinner thinking that I'd had very little dinner, or, you know, not overeaten or anything, and then I'd wake up with like heartburn and feeling nauseous, which I kind of got a handle on by just having half of what I thought I should eat, which was a really strange one for me. And then, I don't know if you know, but I track like all my food, everything all the time. So what was quite shocking to me is there's like a little graph that shows my calorie intake. And although I'm trying to hit specific macro targets and I'm trying to be strict with it, I'd struggle to get below like 1800 to 2000 calories a day. And from the moment I started taking it, I was below that line every single day. So yeah, end of November, there was no stock around. I didn't venture far afield. I basically checked the chemist after Skims and Kicks that are near me, and they didn't have. So I just said, I'll take a little break. And then when we came back from holiday, I checked it out and they had some Clicks at Village View. So decided I'd give it another bash. My doctor and I discussed it. He basically said it's up to me if I want to keep using it or not. So he thinks I'm doing quite well on it. And I said, you know, do I need to do the 0.25, 0.5 one again? And he said, considering it was okay before, probably not. And in hindsight, I think that was definitely the wrong call. Should maybe have gone to a half. The first day, like within an hour of taking it, although I'd only had 6 egg whites and a piece of toast for breakfast, I felt like I'd eaten 2 Christmas roasts. You know, that feeling of like, if I move too quickly, I'm going to vomit. And I basically felt like that for 2 days. But it settled down in the end, and then the second week was much better, and then now into the third week, and it's totally fine. So all in all, I mean, I have a little scale that connects to my phone. It's probably not super accurate, but it measures fat percentage and weight and a few other things. And according to that, from when I started to now, I'm down like in the region of 18 kgs of fat. But overall, I'm only down about 12 and a half kgs now. I have been training quite a lot still. I try to focus on keeping protein up and keeping the training up, because my whole life has been dieting and whatever. I'm quite conscious of losing muscle mass when I'm losing weight, so I try and do it in as much of a muscle preservative fashion as possible. Yeah, I'm this week feeling good. I'm kind of going at about just over a kg a week at the moment. Could probably go a little bit faster, but don't want to push it.
By the way, Charlene's friend didn't ask to be kept anonymous or anything. It's just late and I didn't find out who it was, but unnamed person, thank you very much for your story. Very interesting. First of all, phenomenal results. Interesting to hear about the more severe side effects. I'm glad I'm not suffering from any of that. And of course, point well taken about not jumping onto a milligram. So I guess avoid that temptation if it ever comes for you. Interesting point, in next week's episode, we are going to be talking about prescription, pricing, and availability. So that speaks somewhat to this story about not being able to easily find Ozempic. We'll cover that next week. Right, well, that was our quick catch-up for week one of Ozempic Diaries. We will be back in 1 week with a conversation about prescriptions, availability, and pricing. Cool, Charlene. So thank you very much, and good luck for the coming week.
Yeah, and to you, Jono. Hopefully you keep the gymming up and the eating goes well as well.
There's Instagram, there's our WhatsApp community, there's our website. It's all in the show notes. Check it out. Thank you for listening.